All right, welcome to week five here on AFC North Talk. I am Tony Serino. I represent the Pittsburgh Steelers on today's show. Today we're going to be reviewing week five in the AFC North. We'll talk about my Steelers and their win over the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll also talk about the Cleveland Browns and their win over the Indianapolis Colts. And we'll finish up with that Ravens-Bengals matchup, a big win for the Ravens there. Before we get to that, though, let me introduce my co-host today. All the way from Europe, we have Sonny from SCG Sports. He's representing the Baltimore Ravens. Sonny, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm excited. Lots to talk about. The games didn't go the way that I thought, at least. But that's what we're here to talk about, man. Let's do it.
Absolutely. We have from the Cleveland Browns, Quincy Carrier, the 4-1 Cleveland Browns, Quincy. Every week, it's a new record for the Browns.
yeah, and we're going for another one this Sunday, but we'll talk about that on Thursday. Right. Glad to be on here, happy to be here. And you know, I'm just ready to talk about this week.
And then we also have Ace Boogie from New Stripe City. Ace, a tough loss for the Bengals this week.
Yeah, definitely a tough loss. We'll definitely touch on that for sure. I gotta eat that crow for sure, but glad to be here tonight.
All right, well, let's start with the Indianapolis Colts and the Cleveland Browns. This was a, you know, some call it a barometer game, right? Because the Browns had come off of that win over the Cowboys, but everyone said, hey, look, the Cowboys defense is so bad. Let's see what happens when they play a real defense. Well, they certainly got a good defense. The Colts have been rated the best defense in the NFL right now. And Quincy, it seemed like the Browns passed that test on Sunday.
Yeah. It seems like they passed one heck of a test. This is the number one defense coming in a lot of different advanced scores coming into this game. And they showed up and they were able to, you know, put together 30 points. They got the pick six. So that was about the 7 minus whatever they put up at the end of the game. It's a very, very solid outing, to be honest with you. While watching that game, I feel like the Browns really didn't play their best game of the season this week. Felt like they kind of struggled through some parts. They weren't able to get the run game going. They had some injuries up there that seemed to have affected them. Also, Baker Mayfield put together one heck of a half of football there against the number one. Like, what Baker Mayfield did in that first half, 240 yards, 2 touchdowns, like a passer rating of 120. You have to understand that Indianapolis Colts secondary had only given up 600 yards or so throughout the first 4 games. That's about 160 yards a game. 5 touchdowns, 7 interceptions with a passer rating of 60. So, like, Baker being able to do that against them, Darius Leonard or not, because they pride themselves in India being very deep in that linebacking room, very fast and athletic there, was very, very impressive. Now, he had faltered in that second half. Some of that was due to the couple drops that Jarvis Landry had. Some of that was due to some bad decisions he made. But these are things that you can live with. I'm ultimately more comfortable in the Browns' ability to win a game where the run can't carry you than I was last week. So that is a very good thing. The defense continues to make plays. Miles Garrett, let's say it, through up until week 6 or through 5 weeks, looks like a defensive player of the year candidate. It's undeniable. He's definitely in that conversation. He's played really well. I mean, if you watch that Indy game, I think he got 1 sack technically. I don't know if they gave him the second sack on the called safety because of the forced intentional grounding in the end zone. But he was disruptive all game. And I know he had a backup left tackle on him. But we've seen Miles last year when he went against Dennis Kelly, the backup left tackle for Tennessee, did not show up in that way, did not change the game in that way. Now he looks like he's taking a step in his development. So all in all, it's a good win, but a win that the Browns should nitpick and take a lot of things from and fix a lot of things from, because they're going to play. I don't know if they're going to play a tougher defense. We'll see this week against Pittsburgh. It seems like the team that can put up there. And I think eventually down the line, when you talk about defenses, eventually the Ravens could eventually be up there once their young players Patrick Queen and Deshaun Elliott get some more experience underneath them. We'll see what they look like here, but also let's keep in mind that the Browns' toughest stretch of the schedule was this upcoming stretch. It was Dallas in Dallas, it was Indy at home, and it was Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh. Many people would not expect that the Browns to come out of that stretch and enter week six above 500 or even at 500. I was very optimistic about this team. I predicted 10-6 or 11-5. I thought they'd be 500 at this fact that they have the opportunity to be 5-1. They are 4-1, and they'll come out this stretch at worst 4-2. They'll play Cincinnati. I think they play like Jacksonville, the Texans. They have a nice stretch of five games that are very manageable here. And the worst you could be is 4-2. And also, you'll be done with all of your road division games. Hey, you're in a really good spot there if you're the Cleveland Browns to be able to make something out of this season. And getting this win, however you had to get it, was extremely important. And it's more important that they were able to do it without, you know, Kareem Hunt running for 150 yards. They were able to get it a different way, able to get a little bit more sloppy. And that shows me that this team has more versatility and that it's not as simple as you stop the run, you stop the Browns.
Right. Sonny, it seems like the Browns, I mean, they're 4-1. They are certainly a contender right now in the AFC North for that Ravens title. What did you make of the Browns win on Sunday?
I mean, I predicted the Browns were going to make the playoffs. I thought the Browns were good this year. I thought it was going to be better this year. I had too much talent in that team to just not be good. My question was offensive line. I have said throughout the last couple of weeks, the O-line for me looks like one of the best, if not the best in the league. Big task, like a good D-line in the Indy against Indianapolis, and they rose to the occasion. They play well. But Baker was a tale of two halves. As Quincy said, that first half couldn't do anything better. Like, he was just as perfect as you can be. Second half, he got iffy enough that game, you know, I mean, I watched the game because luckily enough for me, that was the game at the 4 o'clock. So I went to bed very late for me. But, man, that second half was hard to watch. Like, Phillip Rivers was as trash. I mean, Phillip Rivers wasn't good at all throughout the whole game, but he was bad. That second half was bad. And then Baker wasn't that good. Like, if Baker would have played like the first half, that game would have been like blowout city. The fact that it was a game, I was surprised because the offense for Indianapolis is non-existent. That defense could be good, but the problem with the defense being good and having such a bad offense is defense get tired. And that wasn't the case for this game because, again, Baker started hot in the first half, so we can't say that, well, the defense got tired, Baker got better. No, Baker played well, but that offense was just so bad. The Browns' defense looked better, too. I would say we don't talk enough about the Browns defense because they haven't been good. But again, this game, that Browns defense showed up to the occasion. And we might say, like I was saying, that the offensive of the Colts was bad. Doesn't matter. You play to whoever they show up on Sunday, right? And they play well against a good Indy team. I think Indy is a around 500 team. I don't think they are going to make the playoffs this year, in my opinion. Especially now with how Phillip Rivers is playing, should bench that bad boy. But I think it's a good win for the Browns. I think the Browns, I agree with Quincy. I think they were going to make the playoffs, but at this point going 4-1, possibly 5-1 after next week, right? And then you're tied for first in the division. That is a big, like, you are in the spot you want to be. So I think the Browns play well. I think the Browns are a team that everybody should be looking at as a contender.
Ace, you agree with that? Is this Browns team more than just a playoff contender? Are they a contender in the AFC?
I think they're definitely a contender. And I think I told you guys last week on the show that the Colts were a pretender. I told you that Phillip Rivers was done before the season even started. I told you that this Colts team was inflated. And I hear you guys talking about the defense. Yeah, anybody's defense is going to look good when you win against Gardner Minshew, the Vikings, the Jets, and the Bears. Like, those aren't offensive teams at all. So what happened in this game is what I expected to happen. However, as Sonny alluded to, this should have been a blowout. This wasn't a great performance by Indianapolis's defense. They were actually bailed out by two Baker Mayfield interceptions. And honestly, their offense was just pure horrible. Like, if Phillip Rivers doesn't get a special teams touchdown right after he threw a pick to the Browns, and if Baker Mayfield would have just blown up the score on him, they only scored one touchdown on offense against the Cleveland defense that Sonny kind of touched on. We haven't given them that much credit. They're not bad, but obviously they've had injuries in the secondary and stuff like that. Now, I will give some respect to the Colts run defense because they held the Browns to just over 100 yards as a team, but that is only with Kareem Hunt, but he did only average 3.6 yards per carry. So that was impressive. However, though, I still don't think that it's really that good because I think that the Browns left some points on the field there. I think that they could have easily have scored 40 or 50 on this team. And I think that the Browns looked very good at times, especially like Quincy said in the first half. It looked like Baker was putting it together, and then the interceptions started coming. And so we kind of talked about the Andy Dalton diet. This week, they kind of started to get away from that a little bit when the run wasn't really working. And that's the only part of this game that kind of scared me because it was like, oh, man, they're about to just take off. And then once those interceptions and turnovers started happening, it was like, man. But honestly, I think that this proves that the Browns are a good team. I mean, they're 4-1 right now. I think they're definitely on track. And I'm really excited to see the upcoming matchup that we'll talk about on Thursday. Yeah. But I think the Browns handled their business and Phillip Rivers is done. They need to
More than done.
I was thinking about your evaluation of Phillip Rivers last week where he was like, Phillip Rivers, meh. And when Phillip Rivers threw that interception, that pick six to Ronnie Harrison, I was like, that is one of the worst interceptions I think I've ever seen a veteran. He was just standing there.
And one of them was dropped. He should have thrown three picks in that game.
That's the interception, that mesh interception where you're like on that mesh route where he decided to throw it one late and then right into Ronnie Harrison with nobody there to defend. It was like, that would be inexcusable and undefendable if I were just playing a game against Madden on the computer. Like I would be upset with myself if I threw that pick in Madden. He threw that pick in real life and he's a 17-year vet.
I know.
Miles Garrett got a ton of pressure in that game, and the Browns did a good job of wreaking havoc on Phil Rivers. I mean, you saw that on the safety that he got, the intentional grounding. Miles Garrett was all over him. But on that play, you know, Rivers does a good job. He steps up in the pocket, right? And then he just looks left. I mean, I don't even know if he saw that. I clearly didn't see the defender because he wouldn't have thrown it if he did. Awful, awful interception. I do want to say for everyone, we do have Super Chats enabled. So go ahead. If you have a question for anyone today on the show, throw in a Super Chat. We will read it here on the show. Thank you to everyone who does. And remember, don't forget to hit that like button. Helps us spread the word.
One thing I want to say about Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers looks like that ball weighs like 50 pounds. Like when he wants to throw anything beyond 5 yards, dude looks like he is struggling to push
ball. He's always had that weird throwing.
You have no arm anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah, and don't get it twisted, guys. I was a Phillip Rivers fan a few years ago, right? I was the guy that was telling Giants fans down here in Orlando, because there's a lot of New York people down here, like Phillip Rivers may be better than Eli. He just was in a bad circumstance. Like if you guys would have had Rivers, maybe you have more rings. But man, he does not look like Phillip Rivers anymore. And I think that we got a clue last year, and I think this year it's been confirmed for sure.
Yeah, I thought this was a good win for the Browns, a really good win for the Browns. I mean, I know people think after this one, like, you know, a lot of people said, look, let's see what happens when they play a real defense. I don't believe that this was like this proved the Browns were legit. I thought after that game against the Cowboys last week, as I said, look, if you're trying to evaluate, if you're evaluating any game in this year based on how the defense played of either side, you're just evaluating wrong for 2020. So I thought last week's game, made this Browns team. I thought that proved that they were a legit team. But I thought the offense in this game, the offense was terrific for the Browns in the first half. I mean, they had four drives and all of them, you know, converting to points. I think it was two field goals, two touchdowns, 20 points in the first half of this game. And this is without a dominant running game. So the pressure, like Quincy said, was on Baker Mayfield. Hey, you got to make some plays in some big moments. And the other guy who doesn't get talked about enough in this Browns offense is Jarvis Landry. He made some great, great catches in this game. He's underrated. He was terrific. So, you know, this game, though, is why I don't – like, when I look at this game, this is why I don't ever try to use the points or yards when we talk about ranking offense, who has the most points per game and who has the most yards per game. Because you could look at this score of this game and say, wow, the Browns put 30 on the best defense in the league. Okay, no, they didn't, right? It didn't really happen. They put 23, right? I mean, they were still good, but they put 23, right? There was a pick six and there was a safety in this game. And you can also look at the Colts offensively. Say, well, they weren't terrible offensively. They put 23 on the Browns, right? That's not bad. No, they didn't put 23 on the Browns. They put 16 on the Browns. So they had a kick return for a touchdown. you know, the pick six, the safety, I mean, those were the turning points in the game. Phillip Rivers, like you guys said, you know, that I would love to give the Browns credit for that because the Browns do lead the league in turnovers this year. They do, no, right?
No, that was all on
but Phillip no, you can't.
That
you
was just, 100%.
Yeah, that's all. That's all Phillip Rivers. Now, the safety, my like Quincy said, look, TJ Watt's in the running for Defensive Player of the Year, but right behind him, I mean, right there neck and neck with him is Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett is having a phenomenal, phenomenal season.
It's a Freudian slip, Tony.
What did I say?
You said right behind him, right behind TJ Watt. Yeah, like, yeah, it's a Freudian slip. You don't
do that. So I think what this game proves, right, because you have this very good defense in Indianapolis going up against Cleveland, who we've seen is emerging as one of the better offenses in the NFL, is this is a league where it's what can you do for me offensively? Look at the good defenses in the NFL right now. Indianapolis, which is hampered by a bad offense, and their offense cannot move the football. It doesn't matter how good their defense plays. Indianapolis can't win if their offense doesn't show up. And then the same thing can be said for Tampa, by the way. Tampa just lost to Chicago on Thursday in a game where they could only put up 19. I mean, Tampa's defense played well, but they only put up 19 points. It's just not winning football right now. We do have a super chat. Jigsaw13 writes in, "Hey, Ace, rumors are brewing that the Bengals are picking up former teammate. You think Pecco, Andre Smith, or Cordy Glenn?"
If I had to guess right now, if I was a betting man, I would say Domantas Pecco, just because DJ Reader did get hurt. Yeah. Domantas out there. So I would expect it to be him. Andre Smith, I don't know if he opted in or out, but if I'm a betting man, I'm going with Pecco.
Okay.
Pecco played well for the Ravens last year.
I hate Pecco, you know, but it is what it is.
The Reader injury stuff. All right. We will get to that game in a second. Before we do, we got to talk about my Pittsburgh Steelers. 4-0 for the first time. Get this. The first time the Steelers have been 4-0 since 1979. I couldn't believe this when I read it because the Steelers are a storied franchise, right? You would have thought in all of the years of Bill Cowher, in all of the years of Mike Tomlin, one of those teams would have gone 4-0 at one point. Never happened. Never happened. 1979, the last time. And this is a game that, look, Chase Claypool is going to get a lot of publicity after this one, and he should. He was phenomenal. The Steelers just find wide receivers. It's what they do. Never doubt them. But this was a game that was won by Ben Roethlisberger. By Ben Roethlisberger and by Ben Roethlisberger alone. Look, James Conner in this game, 44 yards rushing. 44 yards rushing, 25 of that on a single carry. So he had 14 carries for just 19 yards. The defense played its worst game since week one of last year. Okay, they haven't played this poorly in forever. Ben Roethlisberger right now has a 10-1 touchdown to interception ratio. He didn't have an incomplete pass in this game on third down. Was perfect on third down in this game. And he's a great decision maker. Great to see you. Now, if you guys will allow me for a second, want to do a little bit of a tape breakdown here. So let me cut to my screen. Yeah, we're getting this. If you're watching live, congratulations. You're the only ones that love it. Now, this is all over YouTube. No, but I do want to point this play out because I think this is what I talk about.
We're going to love this.
Yeah. when we talk about Ben Roethlisberger and the decision maker, and I've always criticized Ben for being a dumb decision maker, right? That's why he throws so many interceptions. He's only thrown one this year. Now, that's a big moment in the game. We're talking about late in the game, 3 minutes to go, Steelers up by two, okay, 3rd and 8. They need points on this drive, and they need a first down here because they're at the 35. It's a long field goal in Heinz Field. You don't want to kick that field goal. So they need points. Okay, so what happens here? If you look at the Eagles, right, so the Steelers are coming out in a 3-by-2, right? So the three on one side, two on the other, and the Eagles are coming out in what looks to be, right, this looks like it's split field cover two, right? And if you see that, okay, well, that's good coverage for the Steelers because the Steelers on this play are running what's called smash, right? Which is hook, hook, and then corner, corner, right? And what this play wants to do is you want to challenge the cover to the curl flat defender here, okay? Because if he comes down, well, then I've got Juju to the sideline, and I think I can beat, Juju can beat that safety to the sideline. Same thing with James Washington up top, right? And I've also, on this play, got Chase Claypool in the slot, matched up against a linebacker, and we all know the seam, down the seam in a cover two, that's a great look, right? But right. But here's the thing about this play. Here's why I say this, because this is not, because any a high school quarterback could figure this out, right? But this is not what the Eagles are in. The Eagles are actually in cover six. And cover six is half field, right? Cover two. And then on this side, it's cover four. Meaning that this corner is going to drop out. And now you have quarter, quarter, half. Okay. And so all of a sudden, that Chase Claypool running down the seam. Well, if this safety plays center field, that's gone. And now this corner route, okay, is also taken up by this by this corner dropping out of coverage. So the only way Ben can make this throw is if he goes to James Washington on a corner over here. That's the only throw he has. But he knows I've got a linebacker on Chase Claypool. That's my mismatch. I have to make that work. So how does he make that? How does he make that work? Well, you'll see right here, he's changing the play at the line. Okay. So he knows all he has to do. This is a two-man play. If Ben Roethlisberger can get this safety to play the boundary and not the middle of the field, then Chase Claypool is wide open over the middle. Okay, so you'll watch what he does. First thing he's doing is he's talking to Juju. Now, Emmanuel Aiko broke this play down on Twitter as well, and he did it from a TV angle where you can actually hear Ben Roethlisberger tell Juju, you have an out, right? And Juju's actually going to change his route from a corner. He's actually going to run an out on this play. I don't know that that has material impact on the play itself. I think if he ran a corner, you'd have the same result. But what it does do is it gets this corner thinking about Juju, as he should. Juju is the number one receiver on the Steelers right now, okay? What you want him to not think about is the fact that what he should be doing is thinking about the middle of the field, because we got a linebacker on Chase Claypool. Okay, so let's run the play. And what you'll see is that this safety opens as soon as the play starts and Ben looks over to Juju. Okay, so Ben immediately as the play is hiked, he's looking right at Juju. Okay, and now he's going to open his hips towards this sideline. Okay, and as soon as he does that, Ben Roethlisberger is going to look him off and go right to Claypool for an easy touchdown. Right, you'll watch. He opens his hips towards that sideline. Now he's got to flip his hips to get back to Claypool. It's game over, right? And this is why I'm so impressed with Ben Roethlisberger this season, is because that is what Ben is doing on a play-by-play basis. Ben Roethlisberger is diagnosing before the play and getting rid of the ball faster than any quarterback in the league, save for one quarterback. He's playing. Look, this is a guy who's playing at a very high level right now. And I know you guys are going to kill the Steeler defense, and you should. They were very bad on Sunday. Okay, but if Ben's playing at this level, I think this Steeler team, hopefully that defense gets better, but if this is an offense-driven league and Ben Roethlisberger right now playing at a high level. So I want to hear what you guys think, though. Sonny, what did you make of the Steelers' win on Sunday?
Before that, let's address the super chat.
Maxwell Holcomb.
Maxwell Holcomb.
Yep. No, not his name. Sorry. The first
Mapletron. Mapletron. Because here's the thing. Calvin Johnson, Megatron, okay. Chase Claypool, but from Canada, so Mapletron. Get used to it.
I remember when they used to call Andrew Wiggins Jordan. Those always work out.
let's talk about the Steelers. The Steelers are 4-0, right? And I will say we have been very, very, very unfair to Q on something. We talk about how soft the Browns' defense on those wins have been. We don't talk enough of how soft the Steelers' schedule has been throughout the first four games, right?
You literally just said that the Browns can only play who they're scheduled against.
Yes.
Okay.
Say that, but look, what I'm saying, we here, as the four of us, have said to Quincy, like, yo, you have to play against soft defenses, right? But the Steelers have played a very, very soft schedule. But anyway, this is Big Ben's best game so far this year, which is, you know, the Steelers, we can argue, has been the only team with a preseason so far. So by game four, that's when you get better. Best game in the season so far. Claypool, obviously, it was a coming out party for him. Played great. We can't say anything bad of him. The play that you broke up, that is a veteran play against a team in the Philly on the Eagles that I think they're defensively, they're okay, middle of a pack team. But that's what you do, right? You analyze, where's my mismatch? Oh, there it is. Okay, what do I need to do? Look up the safety. Look that way. Safety opens hips, like you say, goes wide, boom. The linebacker cannot keep up with Chase Claypool. Again, a mismatch. Perfect play by a veteran QB. That's what you want as a veteran. That's what you want for your veteran QB, right? He's not a rookie. He's what, year 50? I think he's in.
Listen, it feels like it's been forever, and I would like it to keep going.
So, saying that, let me flip to the other side. This Eagles offense has looked as bad as it can be, as it can look for the first five games.
Second worst in the NFL coming into this week.
And they look decent. I'm not saying they look great.
They were great.
I think ten straight third down conversions. Okay, but I think a lot of those, good. As I was watching the game back, it was not that the Eagles looked good. It was the Steelers were just completely out of position. It wasn't like, okay, the kid from ODU was making catches, right? But the Steelers looked for me out of position. The O-line for the Eagles was bad throughout the year. And I was expecting Carson Wentz. I mean, I was expecting the Steelers to just break a record for most sack in a game. I mean, mm-hmm. I was expecting them to eat that O-line up. And they generate some pressures for what I saw from the game, but what I was expecting. Okay. Yeah, but still, I mean, I feel like Carson Wentz gets 5 sacks in every other game. And if you think you're one of the top D-lines, if he gets 5 sacks every other game, you expect them to almost double that. My point is that defense looks soft. Look very soft.
They look soft? Okay, don't. They're not. Okay, keep going.
Look soft. And I mean, like, can you, as the 175 people we have here, who are the wide receivers right now that the Eagles have? Can Travis we name Fulton. Them?
Travis Fulgham, yeah. I can name one.
You can name him now. We can name the tight ends. We were able to name the tight ends.
Right.
The receivers, they're depleted on the receiving side. They're depleted in the offensive line. So that offense has just been bad, hit with injuries. And as we talk about last week or the week before, about Carson Wentz, he's reckless. He has not played well at all. He holds the ball too much. So, again, this should have been like a domination of the Steelers defense over that offense, and it wasn't. So that's interesting for me because right now they're going against a way better offense next week, right? So it's very interesting how they're going to attack a better offense that they're going next week. But at this point, I will say the same thing that I also say with the Browns. A win is a win. Doesn't matter who you play every week. But if we're just evaluating that Steelers defense, for me, way underperform against not a bad offense, a bad offense that is depleted with injuries.
Ace, what did you make of the Steelers win on Sunday?
I think Mapletron took off in this game. I think you're kind of underselling the Chase Claypool thing going on here. And I was with you until this game. He is a great receiver. And even on the play that you showed, that was an amazing read by Ben. But look how fast he ran past those guys. This is a guy that – coming into the season, I did an interview with his teammate, Khalid Kareem, that was played with him at Notre Dame. And we talked about him. And he was like, this guy is a beast. Like, as soon as he shows up, like, there's a lot of people sleeping on him. This guy is a beast. And honestly, like, he looks the part for sure. But I think when you look at this game, if the Eagles didn't have Miles Sanders, like, that was the guy that jumped off on the tape for me for them. Like, he had that draw play that was on a third down, and he ends up taking it the whole way. That drive, to me, looked like it was over. And then he just explodes for a touchdown there. And I think I talked about this being a game that potentially Carson Wentz could get benched. He balled this game. Like, that, even though he threw the two interceptions, he showed some signs of life, at least enough to keep his job. And I think one thing that stuck out is that he tested the Steelers constantly deep in this game, and his wide receivers let him down. There were guys that dropped balls and stuff like that. But he came back very solid, even down 24-14. And then I think that from the Steelers side of things, I think that Mapletron was doing his thing. But then we also saw, as Tony kind of alluded to before the season, maybe the Steelers are going to have this three-headed running attack. And we saw that. We saw it in this game. And Ray McCloud was a guy that really stuck out to me. Him with those trick plays, it seems like they've got something there. But one other thing that impressed me, and maybe it's just because the Bengals O-line is complete garbage, but even if you look at PFF, the Eagles have somewhat of a pass rush. And the Steelers' offensive line just really held up well against them. They were able to keep Ben clean. That was something that really jumped out to me with them having, you know, an 8-man deep front. So that really stuck out. But their defense in general could not do anything. There was one point where the Steelers scored on 5 straight possessions. They, like, could not stop them. And Eric Ebron morphed into Eric, I don't even know, because he had 2 fumbles at one point, and that's what kind of let them into the game.
2019 Eric Ebron.
Wasn't, 2019 Eric Ebron definitely showed up. And then you also have a missed field goal by Jake Elliott, who Bengals fans, we know about him. I was kind of surprised that he missed that field goal. And it was just weird because, you know, the Steelers at one point were dominating this game, and all of a sudden, you know, the Eagles are down 2 with the ball. They just could not seal the deal. And so then the Steelers get the ball back. Claypool sealed the deal with another TD. I think he just scored again. Like, I don't know what corner in Philly was on Chase Claypool, but he could not hold anything. And then, obviously, we talked about the defensive line coming into this game. And they did a solid job in the first half, but they really didn't come alive how I thought they would until that second half. And they also helped the Steelers close out this game. And I think that the Steelers did look good, but like Sonny said, the Eagles, surprisingly, in this game, had a chance to win this game and managed to put them away. But I think that it was very similar to kind of what we saw a little bit with the Browns and the Colts, where it was like this game should have been over, but the other team was somehow still in it at the end. But both teams and both games were able to put those teams away. So I think we all went into this thinking, I think Quincy actually thought this was going to be a booty breakdown. And I thought it was going to be a beatdown. Beat that booty game. But, you know, it is what it is. And I'm looking forward to see the Steelers take on some real teams this upcoming stretch. So we'll see. But the Steelers, like you said, 4-0 is 4-0. But we'll see when they take on the real teams.
Yeah, they got a big game coming up this week against Quincy's Cleveland Browns. Quincy, what did you think of the Steelers win?
You know, I'm going to come to Tony's defense here when we talk about the Steelers' schedule.
All right, second favorite team is the Steelers now. Got that.
Don't you ever suggest something like that. I rescind it. No, I'm just like, but I think we got, like, Twitter does this to us, right, where every time a team that people don't expect to be good or people hating on, you know, wins a game, it was against name X team here that might be below 500. I am tired of it because you know what? I've watched the Browns beat the Colts, and then everybody like, well, the Colts are average now. That's not what everybody was saying for the first week. So here's where I'm at. Unless you beat a team from New York, your win counts. All right. Those are the only two teams that do not count.
Buffalo. Buffalo.
No, New York City. Well, New Jersey. Let's say if they play in New Jersey.
From Canada.
Yeah, New Jersey. If they play in East Rutherford, New Jersey, then it don't count because those two are the only truly awful teams I see in the NFL right now. Everybody else is like, yo, look, it's NFL. Like this is not, you know, playing the MAC when you're a Big Ten school. This is not, you know, the SEC calling up Georgia or Georgia State or whatever, you know, to beat them down. So we need to stop doing that. The other thing is, I think how Phillip Rivers looked on Sunday was how I thought Big Ben was going to look. So kudos to Big Ben because he's looked phenomenal. It's at the point now. Can't deny it. He's looked absolutely phenomenal. I don't care what quarterback ratings say. I don't care what PFF ratings say. He has looked phenomenal. He looks like Big Ben. He looks better than 2018. I can't believe it. Whatever. I'm wrong on that one. This man is a freak of nature. I'll never doubt him again. This man, I don't know what he does. I don't know what his genetics are like, but he's going to live to 130 and play till he's 70. Like, it don't matter what he does. All right? Because that's just what it is with Big Ben. I'm through doubting it. The offense is spectacular. Chase Claypool has emerged as that over-the-top deep threat that's really going to unlock Juju Smith-Schuster. That's dangerous. They also got Deontay Johnson just developing. He's really good.
Been hurt, though. He just keeps getting hurt, though.
Yeah, he's small. He needs to bulk up a little bit. He needs to, you know, get on that Hollywood Brown diet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he needs to bulk up a little bit. But, you know, yeah, they got really good things. Eric Ebron at times can be really good. At other times, he could fumble two times in a row and hurt you a lot. Mm-hmm. Even though, was the second fumble actually a fumble?
No, it was an incomplete pass. Thank goodness.
Yeah. But you know, Eric Ebron can do Eric Ebron things at times. We all knew this about him coming in. And, you know, that running game is good enough. The offensive line, I think, you know, they had an up and down day. I think a little bit sometimes Ben would hold the ball just a little bit, you know, to what he's used to holding the ball to under his offensive line, and sometimes that would get to him. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they hold up against the Browns pass rush next week, but that's a topic for Thursday. But offensively, that team's good. It's honestly the defense where you have the questions about, and if you're the Steelers, I don't know if that's a really, really good thing or like a bad thing, right? Because that could be really good, the defense, because what? If we're talking about the defense and what's been wrong with it, it's what's been wrong with every other defense in the NFL. And that's been the secondary, right? The communication in there. It's been bad for every other team in the NFL. So, you know, this Pittsburgh team could be really good in the coming weeks. We're going to see. We're going to see because they're going to be put to the test in this gauntlet that they have here.
Right.
But take nothing away from them. They're 4-0. three of those games are earned. They did beat New York, which, you know, is New York, but everybody else is earned. You know, the Eagles, that wasn't a layup. They played really tough. Carson Wentz, you know, we talk about the pass rush not getting to Carson Wentz. I disagree with that. Carson Wentz just made a ton of plays with his legs there to get out of these pass rushes and just didn't fumble the ball. He didn't do the Carson Wentz thing where he fumbled and the recklessness didn't catch up with him. Now, that's a week-to-week thing with Carson Wentz, but, you know, he played really well. They withstood that. You know, when Carson Wentz is playing well, he's an MVP candidate. We all know this about Carson Wentz. And I think, you know, the Eagles, while they haven't played consistently well as a team throughout the first 4 weeks, I think what the team that the Steelers played this week was probably the best version the Eagles can put out there when it comes to what they can do offensively and defensively. And they flat beat them. You know, Darius Slay had a really good game. I think he left in the second half, but, you know, whether Darius Slay was there or not, he wasn't covering Chase Claypool, so that wasn't going to matter not a single bit down the stretch. So you have to give Pittsburgh their credit. They're coming in here 4-0. You have three first-place teams in this division.
Yeah.
That's the truth. That you just, you know, everybody's good. Right. And then, you know, the Bengals, they're rebuilding. But everybody's good, and even the Bengals aren't like an easy win. And we'll talk about that when we talk about the Bengals Ravens thing, because I don't want people just being, oh, the Bengals, you know, the Ravens there. So, you know, I'm impressed by what I saw out this offense. Defensively, they have some things there, but the personnel that's there leaves you reason to believe that that's going to be fixed later on in the season. And Pittsburgh's looking really good. We'll see how they hold up with these tough stretches that they have with no bye week. That's going to be something that's going to hurt, but they do play Washington, so they have a bye, kind of, right?
And we get Andy Dalton now, so, you know, we know how Andy Dalton versus the Steelers go. I got a good feeling about it coming up. All right, but let's talk about the marquee matchup of the week. The Baltimore Ravens took on division foe, the Cincinnati Bengals. They pull out a victory in that one. This was pretty one-sided, Sonny. I know, you know, last week it was 50-50 on this podcast as to who was going to win the game outright. It didn't turn out that way on the field. This was a dominant Ravens performance.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of things we can say about this game. I was not expecting a blowout. Obviously, I think I called it by 7, if I can remember, 27-20, I think it was. And then we thought it was going to rain, and then it really didn't rain that much. So conditions were pretty, especially for AFC North football, that was nothing. But look, for the Ravens, let me talk about the Ravens first. The Ravens was a tale of two teams. Our offense played bad. Actually, I wouldn't say the offense. Lamar Jackson played bad. Lamar Jackson, in my opinion, had the worst game since his rookie year. Meaning, against KC, he didn't have a good game, but the receivers are dropping, and there's a lot of pressure to him. In this game, pressure wasn't that much there. It wasn't like he was getting harassed or that much pressure. He was just missing people. It wasn't like every time a receiver was covered. Yes, sometimes he threw to cover receiver. The reality is the Bengals should have like at least 4 interceptions. Literally at least 4. Like, he was just throwing like reckless. I haven't seen this. Lamar's usually very conservative on throwing the ball against a receiver that is covered. That wasn't him. He didn't look sharp running the ball. He had, in my opinion, the worst game since his rookie year. The rest of the offense played pretty good. The receivers, when he threw a catchable ball, they were usually there to catch the ball. Mark Andrews played a really good game. The running backs, when they were running, they played well. The O-line played pretty good. I think it was Hubbard beat Brown once, and I forgot who beat Stanley once. Both of them, I saw one time getting beat. They didn't left to a sack, but they did get beat. But the offense, other than Lamar, played fairly well. But obviously, when your quarterback's not playing good, you know, the offense cannot keep going. Now, on the other side, it was just total destruction. I kept saying to you guys that our secondary was good, right? Secondary played well. They played the Bengals tight. Boy made a couple catches on tight coverage. There were a couple soft coverage also that some receivers make catches, but AJ Green looked frustrated. He looked like he didn't want to be there at all. But the person that wishes he wasn't there was Burrow, because that O-line failed him. O-line coaching. Look, we were able to, for the first time this year, generate pressure without blitzing. which that was not good for Cincinnati. But then, obviously, we like to blitz, and blitzing was even worse for Cincinnati. So Wink said, you know what? I know we're generating pressure with the five, but it's just blitz. So you see the secondary, Marlon Humphrey, boom, blitzing, right? You see Everett blitzing, Joker from the safety spot blitzing. They didn't care. They said, we're just going to match up the receivers one-on-one, man coverage. The rest of you, go. And Burrow, I mean, I don't know what else you want the kid to do. The only thing that I thought Burrow did bad was he was throwing some lollipops for no reason. He should have got also should have a couple more picks because he should have just dive and take the sack even more than what he took. I think the kid is tough. But yo, I mean, it was domination. And I think it goes back. I think the O-line was bad. I think the receivers didn't particularly play well. Boy had his moments, but overall the receivers didn't have the greatest game. And I think the coaching plan, when they saw all those blitzes, they needed to shift like, yo, we either need to do some draws or do what KC did to us, which was a lot of screen passes, like basically suck that pressure and dump it. Or let's just try to get that ball out quick. They didn't shift to that. And Burrow kept getting hammered, man, because even when he didn't get sacked, he was taking a big hit. So I'm actually not that concerned. I cannot say like, oh, Burrow played horribly. He didn't really have a chance. I think he didn't play well either. Again, he threw some passes that he should have just kept the ball or throw it away. But I'm not here to say like, yo, he looked like a rookie. Let's be honest. He looked like a rookie against a veteran defense and a great schemer, in my opinion, Dean Pease. He looked like a rookie, which is fine. I think the coaching staff and the offensive line didn't give him a chance to even compete. That's why this game was a blowout.
Ace, what did you make of the Bengals' performance on Sunday?
So it was a mixed bag with this game, because if you would have told me that the Bengals, you would really have to worry about our offense instead of our defense, I was thinking that Lamar Jackson was going to tear us a new one. I mean, I think going into this game, that was the concern for Bengals fans. We cannot stop Lamar Jackson. We have to have a game plan for him. When the Bengals offense came out and immediately was just getting torched and everything with the blitz and everything, it was like, okay, well, maybe they'll do something to, you know, adjust and fight this off. But I expected Lamar Jackson to just really run it up. Like, all of these possessions, I'm like, we got to score. We got to do something because Lamar Jackson is coming. And his defense really surprised me with their game plan and really flustered him. Like Sonny said, Lamar Jackson did not look good. It looked like there were about four interceptions that he should have had, ones that were dropped by corners and defenders and stuff like that. And the defense showed up and they were there to play. But offensively, I know I talked about Zach Taylor a lot in the past. I don't put this on Zach Taylor. And the reason that I say that is Joe Burrow has never played like a rookie until this game. And so that gave me some sense of a little bit of false hope going into this game, thinking that he was going to play that way. But one thing that Joe Burrow has done that has been a mistake over these 4 weeks is that he's held on to the ball too long. And I watched the show, and I think it was Carson Palmer and Chad Johnson were watching it, and they were like, Carson was like, throw it away. You can't do that because these guys are going to hit you. When you look at all the turnovers that we had, Joe Burrow had, I believe it was two fumbles or what? I just know it was three total, three total turnovers, right?
Yep.
Two of those fumbles were because he was holding on to the ball for too long. Everyone's sitting there like, Joe, let it go. Like, you have Bobby Hart like blocking for you. Like, that's not like you can't hold on to the ball like that. And when he did that, it was just like Sonny said, it was just like a horror movie because he's just getting blasted. The ball's coming out. And going into that game, Sonny, we talked about the Ravens like the forced fumbles. So you have those two fumbles there. You also have the bad interception that was because of the blitz. He throws it up in the air. AJ Green can't even see where it's at. He doesn't try to tackle anyone on the way. So there have been Bengals fans complaining about that. But I think the AJ Green situation is deeper than people are really thinking. Like, he goes off of the field with that same injury that was the same hamstring that supposedly he went down with before the season. He said the whole season that he was uncomfortable. In this game, it was almost somewhat disrespectful because they didn't make him a part of the game plan. As soon as that happened, they didn't target him early or anything like that. And I think that it was just a mix of frustration and honestly, possibly AJ being Bengalized. Like, I haven't talked to him about this or anything like that. That's just from what I gathered. But it just seemed like this coaching staff and Zach Taylor really put him in a bad position, just like Joe Burrow, where you don't put an offensive line in front of him, you don't make any adjustments, and you just let him get welded on. It was a similar situation with A.J. Green. And so the offensive line, like Sonny said, was bad. Surprisingly, I don't know how, but surprisingly, Bobby Hart, Trey Hopkins, and Jonah Williams actually graded out good. So I don't know if it was because they were bringing so much pressure, like corner blitzes and stuff like that. Joe Mixon was missing blocks, and they attributed that to him. But they attributed three of the sacks to Joe Burrow. Obviously, we had the turnovers. Marlon Humphrey made the amazing play on Mike Thomas to jar that ball loose, and they ended up scoring. And that was what was most deflating for me was, yes, the Ravens' defense played amazing. And you have to give them credit. Their defensive coordinator, they came out with a great plan and executed it. And I think that Bengals fans and all of us got a false sense of confidence going against the Jaguars the week before. It's just that the Jaguars' defensive line is that bad that they could not land a sack against this atrocious line. And that's not to say that the Ravens' pass rush is amazing or anything, but the game plan that they had, they were able to establish pressure and do what they were able to do. Now, Sonny, you talked about the coaching from Zach Taylor, and the reason that I didn't put it on that is because they did try to start throwing screens. And I was saying that, I was like, if they're going to send all these guys, start to throw screens. And when that happened, Joe Burrow threw errant passes. There was one where Joe Mixon was wide open on the right, and it didn't look like there was anyone around him. He just couldn't get it to him. There was another one to Geo. He just couldn't get it to him. I think after he got flustered from all of that pressure, it started to be so many mistakes made. And I think when you talk about the offensive line and you talk about coaching and stuff, we all want to see Jim Turner gone. He still isn't gone. It's probably not going to happen. It's really dysfunctional at this point, and it's really based off of a relationship that Jim Turner has in relation to Zach Taylor, where Zach Taylor's father-in-law, I think Jim Turner's his cousin. So it's a family thing there, but it's frustrating to watch this play out because you're potentially doing what the national media said, which is ruining Burrow, letting him get hit so many times. He can only take so many hits. And if the Bengals keep doing that, it's going to be Ryan Finley in there, and it's going to be Zach Taylor out the door this season because he decided to retain Jim Turner, because you have this guy in Joe Burrow, and you can't keep letting him get hit. Now, like I said, some of that was on Joe. A lot of it was. I didn't see any play calls this week where I was like, Zach, that was a bad play call or anything like that. But the decision that he has to keep Jim Turner and this offensive line in and to continue to let Joe Burrow just get plastered and killed is just hard to watch. I had Ravens fans in my comments that were, of course, trolling me, but even they said, man, you guys, we felt bad hitting him that many times. Like, we felt bad for you. Like, get this guy some help. And I think that walking away from this game, it's like, okay, we're not competing this year. There's no way that we can compete with the Ravens if Lamar Jackson brought his C-minus game. Like, we can't even compete with the Ravens on that level. So if the Ravens would have been rolling on offense, this game is probably 60-3. Like, that's the way this game could have played out. And it makes me worried about pass rushes and teams like the Steelers, where you have all of these guys. Like I tweeted on Twitter, the Steelers could have 10 sacks against this line. If anybody, I think the Ravens really gave the NFL the blueprint on what to do. Just blitz people every time, and you're going to be able to get to Burrow. You're going to be able to do things like that. But this was his rookie game. I hate that it had to be against the Ravens. But Willie Anderson said, when I talked to him, he said, this is what I was warning you about. When you play in the AFC North, when you play against the Ravens, when you play against the Steelers, it's different. Guys aren't ready to see that, especially as a rookie. They have to get warmed up to that. And I think that we saw that. And you have to give the Ravens credit. I was clearly wrong coming off that Jacksonville game, so I have to eat crow on that. But much respect to the Ravens. And obviously, this was a bad outing for my Bengals and Joe Burrow. But props to the defense. Y'all did come and show up this week. So definitely kudos to them for sure.
Quincy, you've been high on the Bengals the start of this season, and you know, this was obviously a tough loss for the Bengals. But should Bengals fans feel more like this is about some of the problems that they have on their roster and with the Bengals right now, or just a bad matchup in the AFC against a good Ravens team?
Yeah, here's what I think happened here. You know, I think there's a lot to take away if you're a Bengals fan to be worried about, but these are things you knew with the offensive line being bad. I don't even think it's necessarily the pressure that killed Joe Burrow. It was a combination of two things. One, the Ravens were the first team that defensively confused him. That was obvious. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the pressure. He was handling the pressure early on fine. He almost made that one play. It was like an LSU play where he escaped, did the little toss, but he just missed a little bit down the field there. And, you know, he looked fine handling the pressure. It's just he was confused. And once you get to that point to where you're one confused, you don't know who's coming, who's going. You don't know where you can dump the ball off if it is hot, you know, because you don't want to throw an interception. You want to be kind of mindful of that. Also, he's got a little bit of that college in him where he thinks he can make a play with himself when that's just not going to be the case in the NFL. Also, he did what young quarterbacks do. They fall behind and they start pressing. You know, they start thinking it's LSU. Baker Mayfield did this all of 2019. Whenever he would fall behind, he would start playing like he's at Oklahoma and throw all them interceptions because it ain't Oklahoma no more. And that's what happened with Joe Burrow. He fell behind. He started pressing. He threw the one terrible interception. Now, AJ Green, you got to give more than a John Ross effort on that route. I don't know what that was at the end, because before that ball touches the hands of that DB, he's walking. He stopped completely in the middle of a football field. And that was alarming to me, by the way. For a wide receiver to stop all his momentum and just stand still in the middle of a football field, that goes against every instinct he knows. He knows he could get hit over top, even if that ball is incomplete. He knows that's the Ravens, that they're going to hit him. That's pure frustration from AJ Green. I'm not one who likes to be body language doctor at all, but that was just kind of like, ooh. Is AJ okay with everything that's going on with this offense? Like, is there a problem there? They need to figure that out now with AJ, because that there looks like there's frustration there, legitimate frustration, because AJ doesn't do that. That just doesn't happen. But yeah, Joe Burrow got confused early on, and then, you know, the Ravens took advantage of that and hit him a lot. You know, that's pure what a good team's going to do to a rookie quarterback. That's just what John Harbaugh does. John Harbaugh has only lost 5 games against a rookie quarterback. I think Baker Mayfield's one of them, and that's because they were starting Joe Flacco. And speaking of Joe Flacco, Joe Burrow, much like I said Carson Wentz last week, might need to pop in that Joe Flacco 2012 tape where Joe Flacco, hey, anytime he felt the pressure, ball out his hand. That's the one great thing about Joe Flacco, is that he never held the ball. You cannot say that about Joe Flacco in his prime Joe Flacco. But, you know, when he was living up to the contract somewhat, that was the one thing about Joe Flacco you can never say, is the man holds on to the ball and gets sacked a lot. That was not Joe Flacco's thing. So if I were Joe Burrow, I would look into some of that tape and just take some things away from him. You know, not everything, but some things away from him. For the Bengals defense, I think they did a good job, but I think this is more about Lamar just not being crisp. Lamar has not been crisp. Mm-hmm. To the point to where you want to see Lamar. And again, we're grading him on an MVP type curve. So it's a high curve here. You know, if Baker Mayfield were playing like Lamar, I'd be excited. But Lamar is an MVP. He's a former MVP. He gets graded on a higher curve than Baker Mayfield at this point. And he's just not been crisp all season. Like, you know, I understand he has some personal problems going on, so I'm not going to be too critical of what happened in just this game. But it's not just this game. Even against Washington, I felt like he wasn't as crisp as he should have been, wasn't as deadly as he should have been. Still very good. And that's the thing about the Ravens. Even when the Ravens have problems that only like 3 teams can exploit to beat them. So like, that's why they're going to win a ton of games this year and be very successful. But yeah, with Lamar Jackson, not as crisp as I would like to see him. And he hasn't been that crisp all year. I don't think they've been using him right. I think they've been trying to do more, expand the offense more. And that's taken away from what Lamar does and what Lamar does at such a high level that makes this team a team that could go, you know, 15-1 or 14-2, like a lot of people were predicting. So that still needs to be figured out. They play the Steelers, what, in 2 weeks? Who do you guys play next week?
Indy. The Colts. No,
I know Cincy plays Indy, but who did
the Eagles? Yeah.
Okay. You know, they should beat them. But not to spoil anything for Thursday.
Thursday show.
They're going to have some time to, you know, figure it out. And maybe they're just trying to let him work out the kinks in this new type of system. Well, not new type of system, but in this expanded system, and see if he can get prolific at that, just like he got prolific with everything else that he did. And so that you can have more tools to your belt, so a team like Kansas City can't beat you like they do. But yeah, all in all, you know, I think you learned a lot about Joe Burrow here, just because, you know, he faced his first kind of moment in the NFL where a team just overwhelmed him and confused him. And we'll see how he responds against Indy. I still think Indy's a really good defense. I still think they're a really good secondary. So it'll mean a lot what Joe does against that secondary. And for the Ravens here, hey, you know, Ravens, we knew this about the Ravens, that they could not play their best game and win, beat a good team by 30. Like, you know, we knew this about them. We knew this in week one. You know, the Browns didn't come out and play their best game. I don't think the Ravens did either, and they beat the Browns by like 30 in that game. So we know the Ravens are like stupid good at this point. This is why I'm not really like worried about who's going to win the division. I think this is why Baltimore is going to win it by multiple games. But, you know, all in all, you know, if you're a Bengals fan, take this game with a grain of salt. See how they come out against Indy. If it looks that bad against Indy next week, then you should be concerned. Then people should be fired.
Let me say something before you go, Tony. This is also the coming out party, like Chase Claypool for Pittsburgh for Patrick Queen. Patrick Queen had the best Patrick game. Okay. No, I've been critical. No. I've been critical.
Of Patrick Queen. Marquise Brown. I was like, okay, we're not doing this.
No. I said I've been critical of Patrick Queen in this show and my show. I've been saying that he played average at best, but this game, I was saying that he played good. He was rushing the passer. He was tackling anybody that was next to him. He would bring down. I would say kudos to Patrick Queen. I think Claypool and Patrick Queen were defensive and offensive player of the year of the week. AFC. So both of them coming out party this week. So shout out to Mr. Queen.
Yeah. So Quincy brought up the AJ Green situation. I do want to mention that here because I want to talk to Ace. Did you see? Okay, I saw a clip on Twitter where it was AJ Green on the sideline, and it looks like he's saying something like, "Something, just trade me, right?" What's the deal? I mean, is this just a lost frustration, or is there something more?
I think it's a frustration because when you look at this whole situation, and I think a lot of people are just looking and not really digging for kind of answers to the situation. So we talked about him being hurt, right? And so after the first game, people could tell that something was going on because he went down. He never got a chance to play with Burrow. Obviously, with Corona, they weren't able to work out before that. He never really had a chance to really develop a rapport with Burrow. He may have practiced with the guy maybe a week, if that. So then that happens. He gets hurt. He comes back. As soon as they talk to him the first game, when he doesn't have the greatest game, he says, well, I haven't learned the offense yet, because a lot of people forget when he came back or when he got hurt last year, that was during training camp. So he never got to learn the actual Zach Taylor offense, which obviously was a different offense than the one that they have now. Okay, so he's still learning the offense. He says that he's uncomfortable. He's like, I don't have game reps. We didn't have a preseason, so I'm still trying to get reps, and I have to get reps to understand what's going on. He's in a situation where he doesn't know the offense, doesn't have the experience or any of that, not to mention possibly playing hurt because apparently he's moving slower out there. And so there's been a lot of pressure from fans, him signing that deal where it's the franchise tag, where I think that he felt like he had to honor that commitment. Like, if you just paid me $18 million, I'm going to have to play with the hurt hamstring, right? And so then I don't think like any of that is kind of brought up by Zach Taylor. And then there's the weird play that happens. And it seems like Joe Burrow and or AJ has been saying for a while, me and Burrow aren't on the same page. Like, it's not good. And I think that was just frustration. And I think that you also saw that when you talk about the Jalen Ramsey fight with AJ Green the year before. If you remember what happened in that game, AJ Green actually beat Jalen Ramsey on a play, and it was a play where he would have scored a touchdown, but Andy Dalton threw the ball out of bounds, and it was a bad pass. And so I think it all has just been a culmination of him being frustrated with his offense, being frustrated with the coach. And I low-key think, and I have not talked to AJ, I have not confirmed this anywhere, I think when that play happened, I think Zach Taylor benched him. And these coaches, they've been pissing off veterans. They did it with Carlos Dunlap. They didn't tell him that they were benching him. So he was upset that way. I think what happened is that he benched him after that play. And him not being featured in the offense or anything, it just really rubbed him the wrong way. And I think that you just saw that frustration going there. Now, I'm not going to say that he said, trade me. I don't know what was said, but he was clearly frustrated. And this is the last guy that you will ever see frustrated like that with this Bengals team. And I think that it has really also been, in tying back to the Jalen Ramsey issue and this issue, one thing that he talked about when he was playing back then was how bad that the offensive line was, and saying that they had to give these players time to be able to get open and make plays. And he's probably still frustrated because this front office still has not fixed this offensive line. And as a result, he's the one that's taking the bullets. He's the one taking the blame. All these guys are taking the blame except the coaching staff. And one thing that Carlos Dunlap said that was telling when he got upset and had to do that press conference was he said, I don't know how I have to deal with the madness of this coaching staff. I'm just trying to get through that. So it seems to me that they are pissing off some of the best players in that locker room. You even go back to Andy Dalton when they benched him. He was pissed. Right. He was pissed at the way that they handled it. So, you know, I'm not going to say that he didn't say that, but I could understand why someone in his situation, given all of those circumstances, why it will play out in frustration, because everyone's going to blame him. No one's going to blame Zach Taylor. No one's going to blame anything else. And I think that it was just, if you're going to sign me to an $18 million deal, and he has said multiple times that he wanted to retire a Bengal, and you're going to bench me and disrespect me, then trade me. If you're not going to play me, trade me. So I don't know if that was said, but if it was, hey, it's frustration mounting.
Hey, I got a question for you. So do you think this might be a case with Zach Taylor where, like, you know, when you get the new boss and the new boss knew the old boss, what the new boss always said, I ain't that old boss. You know, is this a case of Zach Taylor? I ain't Marvin. Because, like, this is the very opposite thing Marvin Lewis would do, or Marvin would be too loyal to his veterans and refuse to bench his veterans, even though they're playing bad. It seems like Zach's, like, on that I ain't Marvin program and trying to do it the exact opposite. And it's starting to rub people the wrong way.
Oh, it definitely is. And I mean, another one that I forgot to talk about, John Ross. John Ross hasn't been active in 4 weeks. And apparently they used a fake excuse this week. John Ross is out with an illness. Yeah, he's probably sick of this coaching staff, and he's probably sick of this team. That's the only thing that he's sick of. So to me as a fan, it just rubs me the wrong way when you're doing it with these guys, like when you're doing it to Carlos Dunlap, when you're doing it to AJ Green. I mean, the Bengals don't have the best history when it comes to players. And for these guys to commit to stay here, to want to be here, to do everything good, and for you to treat them like that, it just sends the wrong message, I think, to that locker room.
Yeah, that's got to be the worry right now in Cincinnati, is that the wheels kind of come out. And, you know, look, it's not, look, Zach Taylor, and, you know, it's going to be controversial for him to do this, right? To try to get rid of AJ Green, or make an example out of AJ Green, make an example out of Carlos Dunlap, right? Andy Dalton, these kind of guys, right? That can be good for the culture long term, maybe, to get rid of some of those guys, or say, hey, like, you know, we're going to change it up here, right? That even those guys aren't good enough, right? Try to bring up the rest of the room. But if that goes poorly, and for Zach Taylor, are you really in a position right now as a coach to do those kind of things? Do you have the kind of leeway with the ownership to do those kind of things and last long term? Because that's not an instant rebuild when you're benching AJ Green and benching Carlos Dunlap.
Right. Not when you have a resume of only winning 3 games.
Right. Like, right.
You don't have the. It's different if you were to have some kind of success, or these guys were doing things in the locker room, or, you know, to doing inappropriate things. But these guys aren't those guys. Like, we've never seen this side of Carlos Dunlap. We've never, outside of the Jalen Ramsey incident, we've never seen that from AJ Green. So that's what it is with me. Like, if this were a Pac-Man Jones, a Vontaze Burfict kind of situation, and he was doing that to them, I don't think people would be upset with it. But it's that part of it that's kind of frustrating, because Zach Taylor himself, probably, if things continue how they are, he's not going to have a job. So I don't think that he's in a position to be able to do that, for sure.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you all for watching. Make sure you hit the like button. We have 200 people watching, only I think 60 something likes on the video. So let's go ahead and get some likes on here. It helps us spread the word about the show. And make sure you come back on Thursday, because Thursday we're going to be previewing 3 great games in the AFC North. We got the Bengals taking on the Colts, the Ravens will take on the Eagles, and the marquee matchup, one I cannot wait for, and you all do not want to miss Thursday's show. It's Quincy's Browns against my Steelers. 4-0 versus 4-1. Can't wait to watch it. It's going to be a great game on Sunday. We will preview that on Thursday, 5:45 right here. But before we do, Sonny, let people know where they can find your work.
Hey, SCE Sports, Twitter, Facebook, IG, YouTube, and also here, guys. Tuesday, Thursday, 5:45. You know how we do it. We are honored that we have 200 people basically throughout the show. I appreciate everybody joining us. Hopefully you liking the show. And if you have comments, suggestions, please let us know.
Ace, let people know they can find your work.
You guys can find me at New Stripe City on YouTube, and I think it's going to be a war in here on Thursday before that between Quincy and Tony. I can't wait to see it for one. And of course, you can find me here. So definitely be sure to subscribe here. We appreciate the super chats and the support for sure. But you can find me also at New Stripe City on Twitter.
Quincy?
I don't know what this Thursday you guys are talking about. You know, I just like to take every game one game at a time. You know, each game is one of 16. You know, you just got to take it all for what it is. You know,
all right.
What other coach answer can I give there? You know, yes, this is a division game. Yeah, it's a division game, but you know, you gotta fix some things, and you know, you gotta one at a time. So, you know, I am moderately excited for Thursday's show, as Tony is. You know, another show. What's this going to be? 6 out of 16 for the previews. You know, just another show on Thursday. Nothing special. Nothing special. I'm not going to scream or get excited. Tony's not going to get all pink during that show.
I wouldn't do that. I'm very. So you guys know me. Cool, calm, and collected. That's my MO.
We're going to be civilized. Gentlemen of the night, as always. But if you want to find me and find me being real calm about the weekend, maybe possibly even real calm during the game, make sure you follow me on Twitter at Quincy. Also, subscribe and be notified to my YouTube channel, Quincy Carrier, youtube.com/Quincy Carrier, or just put Quincy Carrier in the search bar if you extra lazy. So do one of those two things. Find me, subscribe there, check out my video. I got a ton of content coming up. You might even see Tony's face on my channel in the coming days. Yeah. So with all that being said, you know, looking forward to Thursday, another preview, nothing out the ordinary. Yeah. Tony, friendly. Let me just toss it up to you to shout out all of your stuff. It's gonna be a peaceful week here coming up. That's special, right? Just another division.
No, listen, I had a lot of nice things to say about the Browns win over the Colts. You had a lot of nice things to say about the Steelers win over the Eagles. And I'm sure on Thursday's show we're just gonna have a lot of nice things to say about each other's teams. Can't wait for that show. You can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country, and you can find me on Locked On Steelers every Tuesday. The Locked On Steelers is a daily show hosted by Christopher Carter. I'm on there, like I said, every Tuesday. You can also find me here Tuesdays and Thursdays, 5:45 Eastern time. Review show on Tuesday, preview show on Thursday. So come back then and we will talk Steelers, Browns. Quincy, the Steelers are winning by 100. I just want to let you know that.
Yeah, right. You know what? Hey, look, we're going to bring out all the DVOA stats.
We're going to bring them all out. EPA, DVOA, everything. The Steelers are winning this game by 100. 100 points. That's my prediction. Early prediction, look, 100 points.
We can put all this out here right now. Y'all going to see all this stuff that we're going to do. It's going to be nice. But at the end of the day, it's going to be like me with my shirt off, being like, look, you just got to hit them in the chest. Yeah. They going to fold. I promise you. They overrated. They bums. They ain't be nobody. It's going to result to that. Okay. But before we get there, we're going to be civilized gentlemen of the evening. We are not going to lose our composure. We are going to be peaceful about Big Man and his little elbow that Myles Garrett ain't going to be coming for. You know, Myles Garrett don't like the Steelers at all.
He's not a fan. The Steelers are not a fan of him either. So, you know.
Andrew Villanueva ain't never done about it. You know, but we're going to talk about that on Thursday. That's a topic for Thursday.
That's Thursday. Know?
A nice gentlemanly conversation here in the chat. Nice, peaceful, healthy conversation for everybody's mental health here. So make sure you're subscribed, notified. And yeah, you might want to drop some super chats in that conversation as well. So have it all ready.
That's right.
Have it all ready, because we're going to have a nice, peaceful, calm football conversation. We're not going to be Jim Harbaugh yelling at the referee. No, John Harbaugh yelling at them referees. That's not what's going to happen. You know,
all right. Look for that on Thursday, 5:45 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on AFC North Talk. We'll talk to you then.